This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Thanks, Adam, for taking the time today to join us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'm also a big listener, so it's fun to be on this side of the podcast for once, instead of just a listener.
Well, that's great. Appreciate that. Adam, why don't we start off by you tell our listeners who you are and the company or companies, in your case, that you're involved with.
My name is Adam Karakis. I own, like I said, two businesses are kind of my main focus. The one that I've been doing for longer, I guess, technically, is VeloFix. So we're a chain of mobile bicycle shops. They got it started on Dragon's Den. They got some funding there, and then they kind of brought it, you know, nationwide and in states as well. So I'm just the Ottawa guy now, but I own five franchises here in Ottawa, and we fix bikes at your home. And then the more recent endeavor is I'm now the sole owner of Somersault. So we organize some of Canada's biggest triathlons, swim, biking, and running. We also do duathlons. We do running events and things like that, but a dozen or so events a year. So my little hashtag or my little Coles notes is I spend my weeks fixing bicycles, my weekends organizing community events.
That's great. And how long have you owned Somersault for?
So I've owned Somersault for 4 years, but I've been working at the company or volunteering / working for 21 years now. I'm only 33 years old. I just turned 33, I believe. But it was one of those things that I got into in high school to get the volunteer hours and got hooked. You know, you start by volunteering and then you start participating. Then I became a sponsor when I opened up the bike shop, and then I became co-owner. Now I'm full owner. So it feels weird to say that I've worked somewhere for 21 years at 30 some years of age, but yeah, time flies.
Can you expand on that journey a little bit? Like obviously you started there, like you said, working, getting your high school hours, your volunteer hours in, then became an employee, then invested and then took over. Did I get that timeline correct?
Pretty much. It's one of those things where I'm sure like any entrepreneur, if you look back, the signs are all there. Like I look back at it now, and at no point, it was very late in my life where I think I decided I wanted to do something like Somersault or VeloFix full time, or do it in a very committed or very intentional way. But if I look back, like my next door neighbor for 15 years, he owned a sports store. So I look back at that thing. Oh yeah, Pierre was great. He was always, you know, showing us around, and I got to see the life of an entrepreneur from like, you know, the fence next door kind of thing. In high school, I organized all kinds of community events, again, with no intention of doing it at a grand level, but I kind of got roped into some fundraiser events where I was helping raise money for different causes and got a hand organizing like dodgeball tournaments, volleyball tournaments and stuff like that. But with Somersault specifically, that's what it was, is I did my first 5K, I think, gosh, I must've been 12 years old. And it was a training thing for soccer. My whole soccer team had signed up. And the idea was that, you know, you do your preseason training, we're all going to train for this 5K, and then we're all going to be fit for soccer season at 12 years old. Did the 5K. Fell in absolute love with the event. Like, you know, you're 12 years old and you're surrounded by 1,000 adults and other kids too, but mostly adults. And you see people who look a little bit like you. Some of them look a little more intense than you do. And they're all obviously a lot taller than you when you're 12 years old. So you kind of look up to these heroes. And I just got hooked, and I came back and I did another one of these events. And then when I got to high school the year after, it was, well, I got to get 40 hours of volunteer work. So there was an event in my neighborhood organized by Somersault. So I got a chance to meet the owners and volunteer a bunch. One of the jokes is that one of my first paid jobs at Somersault was, there was me and a couple other guys where we got paid, you know, call it a nickel. I can't even remember if it was a nickel or a dime for every one of those race gel packets we picked up after the race. You know, with runners, they eat the gels and the goos, and they kind of dispose of them wherever. You know, think about it now, where the owner used to go around picking up gels for 5 cents, and that was my first job kind of thing. So after a couple of years of that, I got into, you know, employable years where, you know, you're old enough to actually have a job. And I got a chance to work with them on their race crew. I also raced myself at a competitive level. I was on the provincial triathlon team for a little bit. So every Somersault event, I was either there as an athlete, or I was volunteering, or I was lucky enough to get paid once in a while and be on the team. And then when I was 22 years old, I left what I was doing to start VeloFix. So I started a bike shop, really, really enjoyed what I was doing there, and wanted to kind of bring all those worlds together. You know, like I was 23 years old, really passionate about cycling. I was on this triathlon trajectory. I had a kinesiology degree, so I had a lot of interest in biomechanics. So that led me to kind of starting VeloFix, but I still wanted to get involved with Somersault. So with all those kind of moving pieces moving around, I ended up having VeloFix be a pretty large sponsor of the triathlon series. So now I'm showing up to every race with the van as a sponsor. My girlfriend at the time used to, you know, staff the van while I went and did the race. Sometimes I'd have friends and family come out and help out too, so I could still compete or volunteer or work at the event while the business with VeloFix was still positioned in a good spot. And after a couple of years of doing all that, there was an opportunity for me to become a part owner of Somersault. And I jumped at the opportunity. And ironically, as I'm sure everyone's aware, COVID hit. So I bought the business in February of 2020. So you buy this business, you're so excited, you know, you're in your mid-20s, early 20s, I guess then. And I'm just so fired up about this opportunity that I've dreamt about for 15, 20 years. And 3 weeks later, you know, Trudeau does the famous it's time to come home speech. And events like ours went to zero just 3 weeks after having kind of sunk your life savings and all your energy into this endeavor. So we went dark for a couple of years, like any other event business. And then during those tough times, you know, you're just watching your expenses, you know, eat away at any kind of savings you have in the bank. And there was me and another co-owner. And the reality was the business just wasn't able to survive without some kind of someone taking on the liability of it all. So I was, gosh, I think 28, 29 at the time. My co-owner was, you know, 30 plus years older than I was. And she wasn't in a position to take on that risk and to risk, you know, 30, 40 years of career and have it all kind of flounder in the last, you know, years before retirement. So I think she would have done well staying on for another couple of years, but it just didn't work out. So I was lucky enough to be able to buy out her portion of the business, become the sole owner, bring the business out of COVID. And now we're able to host events again in a really meaningful way outside of virtual and everything else. And we're knocking it out of the park. So now it's been a couple of years of full-fledged events. The series, for anyone that's done it before, is unrecognizable. We have a whole new branded website, new collateral. All of our equipment's brand new. We've really done a good job of putting the athlete first. And there's beer at the finish line and massage and cold plunges and things like that. So for anyone that's been part of this journey in multisport or triathlon in Ottawa for the last, you know, 40, 30, 20 years, I encourage you to come back and take a look at Somersault because it's totally different and you wouldn't recognize it.
So, you know, I can't resist when you talked about the gel packs on the ground. So you literally worked your way from the ground up. Is that what you're trying to say there?
Yeah. What's the old saying? Like from mopping the floors to CEO kind of thing. Like I wasn't quite mopping the concrete, but you're picking up the dirt off of the concrete parking lots. So it's as adjacent as you can from the old, saying.
Wow. Did you always know you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
Again, I think it's one of those things where the answer is literally no, but metaphorically, I think it's yes. I look at, again, my high school years and my first jobs were all entrepreneurial-esque, like working for small business owners. I used to shovel my neighbor's driveway and like every year we'd renegotiate the fee and I did babysitting and, you know, paper routes and things like that. But I mentioned it kind of quickly, but I used to do all kinds of charity work doing like other sporting events in high school. I think I would do a fundraiser for I did one, a couple for Diabetes Canada for a while, where I organized volleyball tournaments kind of thing. And it was only because I needed to raise money for this diabetes trip I was going with some friends and whatnot. But it got to the point where I was organizing like dodgeball and volleyball tournaments and I was wise enough or dumb enough, whatever it was, to own the equipment. Like I was, you know, 16 years old and I was organizing a dodgeball tournament. I was like, well, I'll own the dodgeballs. That way, if I ever want to do another one, I can just do it again for the other, you know, the cancer society or whatever. At least I own the dodgeballs. I was aware if the charity owns the dodgeballs, then I got to go around buying dodgeballs whenever I have a new cause I want to fundraise for. But after having done a couple of dodgeball tournaments for different charities, whenever the opportunity arises, I can remember doing my first one for myself. I had a friend who was like, oh, I had so much fun last week at the dodgeball tournament. And again, this is all very low stakes. And I'm like 15, 16 years old. Like, when's the next one? I was like, oh, I'll do another one. Like, sure. Like, you know, now that I know how to book the gymnasium and now I know how to, you know, get the equipment and all this stuff, I'll do it again. And eventually there wasn't a cause specifically in mind. And I thought, hey, I'll do this to make some money. I was like, yeah, you know, if I don't have to pay the charity and I advertise it as, you know, not a charitable event at 15 years old to make, you know, $500 in a day and registration fee. And all I had to do was rent the gym and, you know, get some snacks and the amortized cost of the dodgeballs over 10 events kind of thing. I look back at it now and go, yeah, well, I was 15 years old organizing dodgeball tournaments on weekends when most kids are out playing. And I worked for a small business owner who taught me so much. And all those little things I think add up to the fact that, yeah, I think I was probably destined to or had a lot of interest in being an entrepreneur at some point. But I don't know that I articulated it that way or really thought about it at all until I was in my 20s and then I was looking to start a business.
Interesting. And so when you bought your first franchise, did you just buy one or did you buy the rights to Ottawa? Like how did that work? How'd you go from one to five?
So yeah, so I bought the rights to all of Ottawa. So with VeloFix, when you buy a franchise, you're buying a territory. You're kind of buying rights to a certain zone of, in this case, postal codes.
Okay.
So once you own the franchise, you own it outright for a certain amount of time and with certain stipulations. And then you can add as many vans as you want to. So I had one van, and the intention back then was to be kind of a one-man band. I don't think I had any aspirations to go as big as I am today. I really enjoyed working at a bicycle shop at the time and just felt like I was meant for more than just working behind the, you know, behind the counter at a bike shop. I thought I'd start my own thing. And just after even a few months of doing it, it was just so busy. Like I was working like any entrepreneur, like the 120 plus hour weeks consistently. So I hired my first employee and we split the hours a little bit. And it just got to the point where we were both just so busy. So I had to buy a second van. If he had one van and I had one van, then we can both work a little bit less. But when you have two vans, they both just got to full capacity. It's like, okay, well, if I hire a third guy and I buy a third van, he can take 25% of my hours and then I'm good. So I bought the third van and repeat, you know, capacity went to the roof. We were just full. The wait time was back to being 2 weeks for a tune-up. So we bought a fourth van, bought a fifth van. And even now, like, if you wanted to get a tune-up, we're almost in October, which is quite far along in the bicycle season. We're still booking like a week out. If you happen to know any good bicycle mechanics, we're looking to expand.
So did that business grow during the pandemic when people were staying at home and kind of rediscovering exercise? Did you see a lift?
It did. Yeah. The double-edged sword is that, like anywhere else, like parts are unavailable. So you get to someone's house and they go, oh yeah, I need a tune-up and I got this flat tire. And I go, well, I can do the tune-up, but there's no bike shop in, you know, Eastern Canada that has inner tubes in stock or whatever the case might have been. So there's sometimes where we got on site and couldn't fix anything. But when gyms were closed and people wanted to get outside, they chose their bicycle. When people couldn't go outside and buy a new bicycle, they ended up, you know, getting the old one fixed up, which benefited us quite a bit. When you buy a new bicycle, there's often not a lot of maintenance for the first year. So we just saw a lot of people bringing out the bikes from the back of the shed, falling in love with the sport because it replaced something else like spin classes, or even just, you know, you can't play organized soccer because that's considered, you know, not distant enough. Well, there's probably a bike in the shed kind of thing. So we saw a big, big lift during those lockdown years.
So interesting, right? You're running two businesses. One has a lift and one does the opposite. That must have been, maybe you can help share with our listeners what that was like for you. You know, mentally, quite frankly, how did you handle that, juggling both those two completely different outcomes?
It's terrifying, that's for sure. But on the bicycle industry side, it's kind of just a blanket statement, but I don't know if it's true or not. I think the bicycle industry is often considered like recession proof because it morphs really quickly. So in good times, people have a little more income, or they have more disposable income, sorry, and they might spend that on recreation like cycling. They might then buy, you know, a carbon fiber bike. They might buy more gear for their bicycle, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that's good for a business like VeloFix. But then in bad times, when things are tight, one of the first things people try and cut out are recreation, right? So they say, well, I'm no longer going to spend money on, you know, hockey programs for the kids, or I'm not going to be able to sign up for the programs I like. And all that money goes into savings, or that goes away from transportation. Say, well, I'm going to ride my bicycle instead. So in tough times, the industry again moves a little bit where, sure, recreation in general suffers, but cycling seems to do quite well because it replaces an expensive habit like driving or often public transit, things like that. It's just a little more accessible for a lot of people. So in good times and bad, cycling does okay, but it looks drastically different. Like I can tell you from before the lockdown years, if anyone of your other listeners know a lot about cycling, the most common bike we'd see in the van was a road bike, carbon fiber with Altegra or higher. So kind of like the upper higher end of the Shimano kind of options. So Shimano makes 10 levels of bike parts. We were just kind of known, either by intention or not, as kind of a high-end road bike shop. If you were doing triathlon or you were a road racer, you were probably familiar or using VeloFix. As where during the lockdown, very quickly it shifted from that to this, is that the volume of service went up. But if you're doing triathlon, well, there's no triathlons for 3-4 years. That bike's probably just sitting in the garage or sitting on the trainer where it doesn't need as much love and care. So we saw, you know, again, drivetrains go from, let's say, 7-speed to 12-speed. We were selling 11 and 12-speed chains with our number one and number two sellers. And then it flipped to those becoming our two worst sellers, quite literally. And an 8-speed chain, which is found on every kind of recreational or kind of leisure or entry-level bike, became our best seller by 4x. So you go from a shop that used to have to stock the highest end stuff, and you're looking for product you can offer your customers because it's you know, second savings on the clock kind of thing, to all of a sudden you have to just stock what's affordable or what's even available or what's going to help someone get to work. And you have to try and not relearn, because we're quite comfortable in bicycles, but relearn what your customers need, because not everyone in the shop all of a sudden was looking for a gram savings and second savings. They were just looking for practicality and puncture proof tires, because they don't want to get a flat on the way to where they were going.
Right, right. Hey, Adam, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the lessons you've learned along the way. And I'm going to start this one off a little bit different than most guests, because you own some franchises and you have a business that is not franchise dependent. Maybe you can talk about, if someone's considering starting a business, maybe the advantages to both.
Good question. And it's different for every person, but I think I'll echo what one of your guests in the past has said, is that there's two things I'll say, and I'll get to answering your question, I hope, at the end, is that you want to build a life that you don't need a vacation from. I think it's kind of like the way I like to live, in a very holistic way. And your guest, Dev Paul, talked about that quite a bit, is that a lot of entrepreneurs, they go, yo, I don't need a vacation, because every day, when you're doing the right thing and you're going in the right direction with the right product or the right service kind of thing, it can be really organic. So whether you get that fix from a franchise or from doing it on your own is a personal preference. For me at the time, I was 22, 23 years old. A franchise was absolutely the way to go. I mean, at that age, you're still quite young. You don't know, you think you know a lot, but you don't really know a lot. And there's so much support that you get from a franchise network, like specifically in VeloFix. They handle all of the supplier relations. They handle the invoicing side of things. My job, again, without kind of painting a picture with one brushstroke, is my job is to fix bicycles, keep my customers happy, and just manage the inbox and manage kind of day-to-day operations. I let somebody else handle what I consider the boring stuff, like, you know, renegotiating terms with Shimano and making sure the parts are available to me when I need to order them. Like, that stuff is something that I don't typically enjoy doing. And a franchise at that age was perfect. It allowed me to do what I was passionate about. It got me so fired up about the business that I'm still doing it 10 years later. And I have no signs of slowing down, no interest in stopping. I love what I do. And it's only, I think, due to the fact that it was a franchise business. Having started with that and then gone to doing something that's incorporated outside of a franchise network, I think did really well, because now, similarly, I absolutely love what I do with Somersault. It's got such a huge impact on the community. I think it's something that the community, you know, needs and appreciates. And I still get to fill my boots by doing something that I'm passionate about. I enjoy, I still do triathlon myself. I still run myself. I enjoy what I do. But there's a bit of perspective in there, knowing that I have more control. I can really live a simple life with the VeloFix side of things, because there's a whole network of people above me that manage stuff outside of my, you know, core responsibilities and core kind of expertise or skill set. But with Somersault, I get to scratch a different itch where I get to have full control. I don't have to worry about someone else's opinion or someone else's preferences or someone else's skill sets, or even just managing other people's schedule. They're trying to get a meeting to decide on which supplier I want to put more of my inventory into and whatnot. So there's benefits to both. I think for me, I was lucky that I chose a franchise first and then chose to go incorporated and kind of, you know, private afterwards. But for anyone who's looking to do something that's quite outside of their comfort zone, a franchise can be perfect. Just make sure it's the right people and the right industry. Because I think, again, it all comes down to that you're doing something that you're working towards building a lifestyle they don't need a vacation from, that you're really passionate about it. Because whether it's the right fit with the wrong people, or if it's the wrong people in the wrong business, you're not going to get to where you need to be. It has to be the right people in the right industry. And that kind of is the foundation. And then from there, you can choose to get the support from a franchise network or go on your own and figure it out.
But you must have carried some of your lessons from the franchise model over to Somersault, though, correct?
Like, oh, hugely.
Yeah.
Yeah, hugely. I mean, the nice thing is that the two businesses are not, like, on a Venn diagram, there's a lot of overlap. A lot of the customers are the same. You know, someone who might get their bike tuned up at VeloFix might then do the race. So there's a lot of natural, networking that's done. A lot of the stuff we do at VeloFix, we do a lot of community events, and it's a lot of the same permit processing that you need for Somersault. So there's a huge tangible overlap there. So that was nice that when I was starting Somersault, it wasn't like I was starting with no knowledge. I had, you know, call it 15, 20 years of experience at Somersault, and then had the VeloFix knowledge kind of on top of that. So there was a lot of a head start for me, luckily, by having done VeloFix. But it's just nice that with VeloFix, I didn't have to learn. Like, let's say with VeloFix, there was, let's say, 10 things you have to know. Head office took kind of care of five of those things. I only had to worry about the other five. with Somersault, and there was 10 things to learn. Well, now I had to learn all 10 of them, but I already knew some of them from VeloFix. And then some of them I kind of knew adjacently from other things I had done and so on and so forth. So I still only had to learn kind of a percentage of what someone has to learn to run that business. But I was lucky to have learned it over the course of 20 years with Somersault. And then having had at that point, 7 years of experience with VeloFix, the gap was quite small from where I was to where I needed to get to run a successful series. And I'm very grateful for having had the trajectory I did.
So, you know, thanks for answering that. And I think there's some really valid points there. You know, if someone is relatively inexperienced in business, perhaps you look at a franchise model because they can provide the systems and the structure and all of that knowledge and impart that to you. Maybe if you're more experienced and, you know, franchise you're a bit hesitant about, then maybe you do and go it on your own. What advice would you give to someone right now that is currently running a business, franchise or non-franchise, that may be struggling a little bit? Because you went through some struggles during the pandemic when all of a sudden your business closed down. So what lessons would you share with that person?
It might be a little bit too late sometimes, but to rely on the network. I know like everyone's got a good mentor and a role model and whatnot, but I can't overstate how much my network has really helped me. And I hate to call it a network sometimes, because often you're relying on friends. And sometimes, you know, your friends might not have the same perspective that you do. Your network might not have the exact same perspective. Let's say with Somersault, I'm running into an issue and I go to a friend who has never been in the triathlon world, but actually, I'll use a real example. A couple of years ago, we wanted to overhaul our water safety program. When we organize our triathlons, we have to have lifeguards and whatnot. And back in the day, it was a requirement that the city take care of that. We weren't allowed at all to have any involvement. They said, you cut us a check, we take care of water safety. And then that was downloaded onto the shoulders of race directors a couple of years ago, where the city says, you know, we're short staffed. You guys need to take care of your own water safety and kind of prove prove your worth. And even though I was a lifeguard at one point, and I've done, you know, quite a few triathlons, so I'm familiar with what a water safety team looks like, it wasn't my skill set. So I was fortunate enough to reach out to some friends who I admittedly hadn't talked to in a couple of years. But because you have a strong network and because you're always out there engaging with people and hopefully you get along with people and you're a warm person, which most entrepreneurs are, or a lot of entrepreneurs are, I shouldn't say most, but I think a lot of us are pretty, you know, extroverted and have a really tight network. I was able to reach out to some friends and work with them. They had never done a triathlon before, but they were experts in water safety. We built this plan that I'm quite proud of. We now, in my opinion, have the best water safety team out there. And this friend that I mentioned, his name is Stefan, I'll mention him by name. He was selected to be one of the lifeguards at the Paris Olympics in 2024. So when the Olympics come knocking and they're looking for the best lifeguards in the world, they come to Somersault. I think that's so cool. And I think that's obviously an exaggeration. But here's someone who a couple of years ago had no experience in triathlon, but had a quite a deep water safety background. And that helped me out immensely. And it was all because of that network that I spent years curating, where you meet someone at some event and you build a connection and you stay in touch and you're nice to them and you take a genuine interest in their interests. And someday when you need a little bit of help, you can go back to someone like that and ask for a little bit of insight and ask for perspective that might be outside of what you know. And hey, it ended up working out well for him, because him and his daughter both got to go work at Paris this year and be on the course for triathlon and rowing and water polo and all those things. And I think that's hopefully a core memory for a long time for them. But I think the answer to your question directly is rely on the network.
That's a cool story. And what a nice gift that person ended up receiving by being able to go to the Olympics. It's not too many people could say they've done that, let alone be a part of it. As opposed to just a spectator. Yeah, that's great.
That's it. Yeah, I worked at the London Olympics myself in 2012, and I have a sister who worked at the Rio Olympics. So like I've been fortunate enough to be there myself, and it's the trip of a lifetime, literally. So I think he enjoyed it, and I recommend it to anybody else who can get an opportunity to like that.
Hey, Adam, before we went live, you were telling me a little bit about the work you're doing in the community. Can you share that with us, please?
Sure. So with VeloFix, when I was just doing that, you're a marketing guy, so I think you'll appreciate this. It was more of the shotgun approach. So I quite literally, whenever I had a spare minute, I was volunteering at some event. So at first it really was a marketing ploy where, you know, obviously the fit is very organic, where if you're a bike shop, you volunteer at the triathlons or you sponsor the triathlons. And then once you've covered all the triathlons, you say, well, I'll go volunteer at the biking events. And they say, well, I'll go volunteer at the running events, where I know running isn't exactly cycling, but I'm sure a lot of runners have bicycles. So it becomes a little bit less obvious, but it got to the point where I think a year into my VeloFix career, I was doing over 100 events a year. And some of them were like volunteering at farmers markets or or the kid fun fair at the elementary schools and whatnot. And they were kind of getting a little, off the beaten path as to what might be a direct marketing fit. But again, I built so many good connections there that it's then led me to building what I now consider a really strong portfolio of events and charities that we give back to. So with Somersault, every event we do is a fundraiser for someone or something. So just to name a couple off the top of my head is that we raise money for Immerman Angels at Somersault. So that's our big winter race where we donate money to them and they help with one-on-one cancer support. Whether you're going through it or whether you're a supporter of somebody with cancer, you can help, learn how to get the support that you need as someone going through someone else's diagnosis. We do stuff with the Boys and Girls Club. We do stuff even with like local sports teams. Like we did one just recently with the St. Matthews High School football team. If you're a high school team and funding is short sometimes and you need new helmets or new jerseys, we fundraise for stuff like that too. Even though it's not a charity, we can help local sports get the equipment they need. We did one just last week with a local broomball team where they qualified for nationals out in the, I think it's somewhere in Alberta next year. But if you're a bunch of 15, 16 year old athletes, you don't always have enough money for plane tickets. So we help them fundraise to get them to nationals kind of thing. So with Somersault, we do all kinds of things like that. And then through Velofix, we still donate our time and our services and product often to things like bike school rodeos, and we do all kinds of helmet fittings, and we do safety talks and classes and things like that. So every year I try and donate a certain number of hours, a certain number of dollars, and then sometimes some product as well. And then on top of that, we're also certified carbon neutral with Somersault and Velofix. So we try and make sure we do all that we can without causing all these negative impacts on the environment. So both Velofix and Somersault are certified carbon neutral, and Somersault is not certified, but it is effectively a zero waste business.
Great. Thank you for everything you do in our community. It's awesome to hear that. Adam, where can our listeners find out more about both companies?
So with Velofix, you can find us online at velofix.com. You can book an appointment directly online. You see all of our times and dates and availability. With Somersault, it's somersault.ca. With both of them, we're on Instagram and Facebook. But my email is easy to find. It's adam@velofix.com or adam@somersault.ca. I'm easy to find. I'm not hiding these days. So if you need to get a hold of me or if you have any questions, let me know.
Thanks so much for doing this, Adam. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. I appreciate it.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.